to Podiatrics Pediatric Podcasts. Today we're going to be talking about ketoacidosis part 2. So the first part of this podcast is going to be a quick recap of what we covered in part 1. For those of you who are new to the podcast, our podcasts range from kind of common clinical scenarios to exam preparation. And our most recent set of podcasts have got the focus on looking at the physiology of some common things. We looked at the patient with elevated lactate, and the past two podcasts are going to be about the patient with ketoacidosis. We talked about alcoholic ketoacidosis, diabetic ketoacidosis, and starvation ketoacidosis in the previous podcast. And now what we're going to do is we're going to delve a little bit further into the physiology. So where we are with regards to the physiology after part one is that the production of ketones is favoured in a metabolic environment where you've got low insulin and high glucagon. This stimulates an enzyme called hormone-sensitive lipase. This hormone breaks down triglycerides into what a triglyceride is made of, and that's a glycerol spine or a glycerol backbone and free fatty acids. The issue that we said with this is if you have large amounts of acetyl-CoA, which is what happens when you break down a lot of these free fatty acids and glycerol, you've got to know what to do with all of that acetyl-CoA. And if your Krebs cycle is exhausted and can't process some of that acetyl-CoA, it gets shunted down a ketogenic pathway and you produce things like acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate. And we're going to talk more about this ketogenic pathway today. We said that in the conventional way of looking at ketones, that they are acidic because they can act as proton donors. We mentioned this concept of alcoholic ketoacidosis, where the healthy metabolism of alcohol means that ethanol is normally oxidized to acetic acid by alcohol dehydrogenase. And the problems with abrupt withdrawal, meaning that you release catecholamines that leads to lipolysis and ketosis, and that this high NADH level facilitates the conversion of acetoacetate to hydroxybutyrate rather than the conversion of acetoacetate to acetyl-CoA. And it's this high NADH that is very important in the pathophysiology of alcoholic ketoacidosis, because your acetoacetate can be converted to acetyl-CoA. And we'll talk about how that can happen today. So we're going to start by talking about ketone metabolism. So the two main areas where ketones are metabolized are the liver and the peripheral tissues. So in a lot of cases, we can simplify it by talking about the liver and use the example of skeletal muscle. So if you have got acetyl-CoA, what can happen? So if you imagine, let's follow the pathway properly. We've got the breakdown of triglycerides into free fatty acids and glycerol. These free fatty acids, through beta oxidation, and we remember we talked about beta oxidation as oxidation of the third carbon, these can be converted through beta oxidation to acetyl-CoA. And then we've got this scenario where we've got this acetyl-CoA in our liver. What's going to happen to it? So actually what we do is we take our acetyl-CoA and we can then generate ketones from this process. Or we can convert it to acetyl-CoA. And depending on different enzymes, this can proceed down different parts. And really what to say is acetyl-CoA can firstly be converted to something called acetoacetyl-CoA. So if you imagine what we've done is we've added an aceto bit to it. And the enzyme that does that is something called acetoacetol CoA thiolase. And actually, for those of you who aren't familiar with this term, it's not a commonly used term in biochemistry. But a thiol, chemically, is an alcohol, but with a subtle difference. So alcohols have an R. So R means a carbon chain of however many lengths attached to an OH group. So we call this a hydroxyl group. So the formula for an alcohol would be ROH. Thiols are RSH. So that tells you what happens. So largely speaking, they're very similar to alcohols, but the oxygen of the hydroxyl group has been replaced by a sulfur. And thiols are really important because whenever someone has a poo or someone expels gas, farts, whatever you want to call it, thiols smell of rotten eggs. So if people have rather stinky farts, they are producing more thiols, and in this case, methane thiol, and are responsible, one of the compounds responsible for asparagus whey, the weird discoloration and smell of whey that you get if you eat asparagus. So what have we learned so far? Well, clinically, we've learned today that thiols are alcohols, ROH, but the sulfur has replaced the oxygen, so we've got the formula RSH, and thiols are responsible for the rotten egg smell of farts and poo. So they are really important, if not to berate your partner or your friends, that they might be excreting an excess amount of methane thiol. So what thiolase does is there's a key thiol group in acetyl-CoA, the sulfur attached to the hydrogen. And what it does is it essentially will convert acetyl-CoA to another chemical called acetoacetic acid. And acetoacetic acid is really two molecules together, the acetic acid bit and the acetyl-CoA. So that's basically what's happened. It rearranges the chemical structure. So we end up, after we've used the thiolase enzyme, with acetoacetyl-CoA. Okay, so we've gone from acetyl-CoA to acetylacetyl-CoA. And it's really important that this enzyme, the thiolase, can work in the forwards and the backwards direction. So in the liver, you can convert from acetyl-CoA to acetoacetyl-CoA using this enzyme, or you can go in the backwards direction. Okay, so you've then got your acetoacetyl-CoA. And what's going to happen with it next is we're going to get an enzyme really easily mentioned, which is called HMG-CoA synthase. And all that means is HMG-CoA synthase causes the production of HMG-CoA. And in reality, HMG-CoA, a lot of you will be familiar with this, not because of ketoacidosis, but because of the mechanism of action of lipid-lowering agents such as statins. Statins work by inhibiting an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase that is involved in the cholesterol synthesis pathway. And this is the first key point I want to make from today's podcast, other than methane thiol makes your fart smell. It's that HMG-CoA has different fates depending on the enzymes. So if I was to take some HMG-CoA, which we now will have formed after we've used HMG-CoA synthase, that HMG can either become cholesterol or it can become ketones, depending on the enzymes. So for example, if we were to theoretically inhibit HMG-CoA lyase, which is the other enzyme, we would form more cholesterol. And if we were to inhibit HMG-CoA reductase, we were to form less cholesterol. So there's, broadly speaking, two fates of HMG-CoA reductase. You can either form cholesterol if you have got HMG-CoA reductase. HMG-CoA lyase will tend to cause ketone synthesis. So the fate of HMG-CoA depends on whether you have got predominant reductase and then you'll form cholesterol, or lyase, which you will form ketone bodies. So that's an important thing that I want to talk about. Okay, so just to recap what we've talked about so far in this pathway, we started with acetyl-CoA and we converted it to acetoacetyl-CoA. A lot of these chemicals have got the word acetyl in, and acetyl means a CH3CO group. So what that means is acetyl-CoA, acetoacetyl-CoA, acetoacetate that we'll talk about in a second, have all got this acetyl bit in common, which means that they've got the CH3CO group in. Acetoacetyl-CoA, you'll then, we've said, acetoacetyl-CoA will get converted to HMG-CoA using this enzyme, okay? Which is HMG-CoA synthetase, which means it synthesizes HMG-CoA. This HMG-CoA can then proceed down the cholesterol synthesis pathway in the presence of HMG-CoA reductase, which is what statins inhibit and therefore decrease your cholesterol biosynthesis. So that is what we would call your cholesterol synthesis pathway. The other thing that can happen is that this HMG-CoA can go down your ketogenic pathway. And that's when the next enzyme is really, really crucial. So we've got this HMG-CoA. And if we use this HMG-CoA lyase, we will form acetoacetate. And then this acetoacetate can be converted to beta-hydroxybutyrate or can be converted to acetoacetate in your peripheral tissues. So depending on what happens now, your acetoacetate that is formed through this complex biochemical pathway can either go into your peripheral tissues or it can be converted in the liver to beta-hydroxybutyrate. So this is ketone synthesis. But it's important to be aware of, if this then gets converted to peripheral tissues, you can eventually go back to producing acetyl-CoA. So if we transport it to peripheral tissues, which can happen, you've got this acetoacetate in your peripheral tissues, let's say muscle tissue. And then this can get converted to, eventually, to acetyl-CoA through acetoacetyl-CoA. A confusing thing that often trips a lot of people up is the enzyme that converts acetoacetate to acetoacetyl-CoA is something called, and it's a long word, but it's called SCOT. So it's called S-C-O-T. So SCOT is what converts acetoacetate to acetylacetyl-CoA in peripheral tissues. And then finally, the really easy bit is the same enzyme that converts acetyl-CoA to acetoacetyl-CoA, our thiolase, can do exactly the same thing in peripheral tissues. It's the same enzyme. So if you're, the first condition I'll talk about is thiolase deficiency. So if you lack thiolase, tend to have an onset of 1 to 2 years, you'll get severe ketoacidosis and encephalopathy, be precipitated by illness in most cases, or starvation. And it responds really well to intravenous glucose, and the characteristic very fast resolution of symptoms to intravenous glucose is characteristic of thiolase deficiency. So if you've got thiolase deficiency, what is not allowed to happen? Well, you don't get the conversion of acetyl-CoA to acetylacetyl-CoA. Okay, so that's worth, you know, being aware of. So then you have got the problems with having all of this acetyl-CoA. Important to note that thiolases are involved in metabolism of amino acids like isoleucine. So therefore what you're looking at is, I won't go into the specific metabolites now, but you will be looking, as part of your diagnostic workup, at increased levels of backup precursors in isoleucine metabolism. So they would be, and I'm just going to name them for the purposes of completion, they would be your methyl acetoacetyl-CoA and your methyl hydroxybutyrol-CoA. And they're precursors that are involved in isoleucine metabolism. And isoleucine metabolism is basically how you will get from isoleucine to eventually succinyl-CoA, okay, which is what you want. So the other condition is deficiency of another key enzyme that we talked about, which is SCOT, so SCOT. And this is the enzyme that converts acetoacetate to acetoacetyl-CoA in your peripheral tissues. So if your acetoacetate in your urine is high in SCOT, that makes sense because you can't convert it to acetoacetyl-CoA. You also have elevated 3-hydroxybutyrate. The conditions are mentioned as clinical application. They are in themselves, for understanding ketoacidosis, not important. Okay, they are mentioned as ways of applying ketoacidosis. And that's why they've been included at the end. The important things I want you to take from this podcast of part two is to firstly think about there are inherited metabolic conditions that are deficiencies in enzymes such as thiolase and SCOT, and these will cause ketoacidosis because there are deficiencies in enzymes that are crucial in not just the production of ketones but their elimination. And if you've got deficiencies in these enzymes, you will have life-threatening presentations with ketoacidosis. I've briefly talked about a pathway where you begin with acetyl-CoA, you then use thiolase to form acetoacetyl-CoA, you then have HMG-CoA synthase or synthetase that produces HMG-CoA. What happens with that HMG-CoA depends on the enzyme. If you have HMG-CoA reductase, you will form cholesterol, and this is what statins inhibit. If you've got HMG-CoA lysase that's been predominantly affected, you will tend to form ketones. And these ketones that you form with lyase tend to be acetoacetate. Acetoacetate can be converted to acetoacetyl-CoA in peripheral tissues or hydroxybutyrate in the liver. So the fate of acetoacetate in the liver, you can convert it to ketones. If you're in peripheral tissues, you can use that acetoacetate and you can eventually generate acetyl-CoA, providing that enzymes, including SCOT, are working correctly. If you've got deficiencies in either thiolase, that remember will be our last step of this process, the conversion of acetoacetyl-CoA to acetyl-CoA in peripheral tissues, or SCOT, which is the penultimate enzyme that's involved in acetoacetate, go into your acetoacetyl-CoA, you will have problems with life-threatening presentations of ketoacidosis. So that's been a quick whistle-stop tour. I don't want you to get bogged down, but if you remember thiolase and SCOT for today, and that they're involved in this ketone pathway, that would be excellent. The clinical applications for exams is that we've mentioned HMG-CoA reductase, that is the alternative fate of HMG-CoA, rather than going down a ketone synthesis route with HMG-CoA lyase. HMG-CoA reductase is involved in cholesterol synthesis. It's important clinical applications, mechanism of action of statins, common exam question. And finally, to remember, if your farts smell, it could be because of methane thiol for that rotten egg smell. So if someone's got eggy farts, methane thiol, blame it on that, and that should hopefully remember that thiols contain sulfur, and it's that sulfur in thiols that are responsible for the smell. Thank you very much for listening.